All right, so here's where we go. I say that this podcast right here should be named Genesis, because this is the beginning. And what we want to do here is put together ideas of goals and a name for our podcast to, you know, to get started. And some of the ideas that I've come up with over the past few hours is our goal is to connect to others, sharing things that spark our passions, how God protected our family by grace, the grace that our Grandma Bowen prayed over us. And this grace started, and Aunt Cindy shared some notes with us the other day, and I really didn't know this, but she says, Mama lost her three babies, and she began to cry out for God, or cry out to God for all of us, and we are reaping the benefits from those prayers, and that is why we have a duty to cry out to God for our children and continue this tradition. So that really meant a lot to me. I knew that my grandma, or our grandma, prayed grace over us for a long time, but I never knew why or how it started. So, you know, that information coming from Aunt Cindy, you know, was a blessing to me, to help me understand where it came from. So with this podcast, we kind of want to do the same thing for our children, to let them know where the grace come from and how they've got to carry on and how we've got to carry on so they can and carry it on for their children. What you got to add to that, David?
What I would say to that, as far as the name of the podcast, and I don't even know what a podcast is, I'm more of your outdoors type guy, and this technology scaring me to death. But all of what you said, I agree with. There's not anything that I disagree with. It seems kind of funny in a way that we would name it Genesis when we're so close to Revelation.
yeah.
And I say that it is a joke, but I do believe that. My goal by doing this is I want people to see that I'm no different than anybody else. I go through good times and bad times, but I want people to see that, like my parents and like my grandparents, I know where to turn to when times are bad. And as a Christian, I want to walk closer to Jesus every day. I want to learn to walk closer to Him, but I want people to see that I'm not perfect, and I don't think that anybody is, and I don't want anybody to get discouraged. I want them to see us, and I want them to say, you know what? I want what they got. I want peace of mind, because I think that's something that we all share. We know that we can turn to God in our problems and in our trials. Not everybody does. And like you said before, we have a huge family, and not everybody has a family here on earth. We have our family that's in church. We have our family that's not in church. We were, say, lucky, blessed. A lot of our family grew up with us in church. And we'll talk about a lot of that. But we also have cousins that have children. They may not ever know some of these stories that we're going to tell. And if we don't put them down in some kind of platform, we're going to lose it. And this is technology. This is a platform. While I don't understand it, and it kind of scares me a little bit, it's here and we should use it. I feel like I want my son, I want my daughter, I want their children to know what kind of people we are, where they came from. They will remember Grandma Bo, and they were blessed to live here on the farm. They still have memories of Grandpa. But there's others that didn't, and they won't have those memories. But I hope that they'll get memories or remember things through us, because they were. It don't matter how much time you spent with Grandma. It didn't matter how much food you ate at Grandma's table. She loved you the same, and she thought of you as the same. You were a part of the family. You were just as much part of the family as the back of hands that work every day. And the way you were is she did that. She would talk about you constantly to us. And that was just something she loved to do. We're going to talk about the history, I guess, of our farm, which in a way is the history of our family, and in a way it's the history of our church. Our church is now here on the farm. We're sitting in our church, which at one time was a soybean field.
It was actually one time a backer bed, small plants, wasn't it?
Actually, right on it, the tobacco beds were a little bit further, closer to the pond from here, but 100 yards within it. I mean, this is the driveway you would use to get to the tobacco beds. That's it in a nutshell. I don't have anything relevant.
Well, Keith, what do you think?
Information.
You got something to add to it?
I guess they both hit on it. I was the recipient of the coming in from away. As a little kid, them moving back at six, I was the baby looking up to my bigger cousins that are now sitting here beside me. And I think about that, and, you know, living away and coming once a year, those first 6 years of my life built things into me that I guess I respected and I looked forward to, that I try to build into my everyday life now with my child. And when I think about that, it all goes back to what David said about Grandma. You weren't any different when you came or if you were away. And she kept in touch with everybody. You know, we were joking the other night about if you wanted to take out a whole generation, all you'd have to do is put stick shifts and rotary phones. Well, we all remember the rotary phone with the 30-foot cord in the kitchen at Grandma's, that we can share now these stories that take us back to those days. Because in the day that we live now, we're looking for simplicity that we know, but we've tended to get away from. Like David said, we've got a lot of technology right here in front of us. But it all goes back to a simpler time. And that's why we're coming together behind this technology to take it back. You know, I said something to David after he called me up and said, hey, I want you to listen to something where he was on a podcast that his buddies were doing. And after listening to it, I told him, I said, you're on the hook now. Well, then I didn't know that my daddy had had a conversation with him a few months ago, right before he passed, that spurred him to thinking about how this is all going to come together. Me and Michael had been talking about it, but what it's all come down to is we've also been praying about it. And through that prayer, we've all felt an urge to do this together. And as we're doing it, it's becoming a reality that goes back, I just mentioned two generations, Grandma and my daddy. And that, to me, is what makes this family podcast that's going to reach out, hopefully, to people that necessarily are not blood, but we call family, because our grandma instilled that in us, that one, we're no better than anybody else, but everybody can be family. And that's an important concept that I think our church, our family, has taken and made sure that that's a core principle that we live by, that we can all be family. Doesn't matter the color, doesn't matter the size, doesn't matter where you're from. You can be my family. And there's going to be stories, there's going to be recounts of things that have strengthened all of us over the years. And I think that's the important thing that we see through this, is that we're strengthening one another. We're not tearing each other down. We're building each other up. We're doing this so that there's a connection. It doesn't matter what the distance is between us. We're coming from right here in rural Georgia on the farm that we grew up on. But by telling this, hopefully it's going to go out and it's going to give a little glimpse into our experiences and why we're here today doing what we're doing. And I don't know that there's any other thing that I'd rather be doing than being right here in our sanctuary with family, and hopefully we're going to have more involved.
Yeah, we definitely want to have more people come on, more cousins. You know, we're gonna get this thing set up where cousins can call in from out of state if they got a story they want to share. They can even call in, you know, or come in and speak to us right here, you know, on the stage with us. The good Lord's been working on me for some time now to do this, to kind of share my story, my highs and my lows, and where I've came from. And you know, it's going to be a hard thing for me to do in some aspects, but he's worked on me enough. He's toughened me up enough to be able to talk about these things. And maybe it'll help somebody else learn from my mistakes. Maybe it'll help them see that if they're going down the wrong road, that they'll be able to just make a turn by asking God for help. And we've got all these notes made up. We've got, you know, it's not scripted what we're doing here, but we do have notes that we try to stay on topic. And
okay, Michael has notes.
Yeah, David come in with his elephant memory.
I wrote W. You know. that's the thing I have. W. But listening to that, that you see it's Jesus. It's not us, it's not our family, it's your walk with Jesus and your relationship with Jesus, that's the number one thing that our grandma taught us, is that you walk with Jesus. My daughter's in college. She called home and she said, "Daddy, got a question. What kind of church do we go to?" That's kind of funny in a way, because she was raised in our church here at the farm. And to give y'all a little bit of a background on that, it's what is considered non-denominational. Most of us grew up in a Pentecostal
Church of God.
Church of God.
Yeah.
That's what we were at one time. And we'll go into the history of kind of how our church evolved or changed. Or basically, we stayed the same, though. Nothing really changed, except for we don't have an affiliation with a Baptist or Methodist or... And we're not saying that's bad. We're not trying to say that denominations can't go to heaven. That's definitely not what this is about. But we are about one church. We're all supposed to be looking to Jesus.
One bride.
And it don't matter what denomination you are, you should be following Jesus Christ. That is what we believe.
That's right.
That is how we were raised. And we're not ashamed to say that, even if I don't have any notes.
Well, my notes that I had on that particular part was, in this season, we're needing to unify the followers of Jesus. I'm not saying Christians or denominations. We all should be working together as a body. Denominations work as a tool for the enemy. I say that because it divides us. It gives different people different excuses why they shouldn't be doing this, that, and the other with another congregation. And that's bullcrap. I mean, we need to all be working together in a unity, sharing the Bible. And when God comes back for his bride, he's not coming for the Baptist, Methodist, Pentecostal, or self-proclaimed Christians as a name.
He's not coming back for white folks, black folks, yellow folks, purple folks.
That's right. He's
coming back for his church.
His church.
And
his
people. I think that in not only in America, I think all around the world, I think that's what should happen is Christians should remember you're a Christian because you're following Jesus, and it doesn't matter where you're at or what you look like.
Right.
You should treat everybody the way Jesus Christ treated people.
And that means loving everybody. You ain't got to agree with everybody, but you got to love them.
You got to love them.
I mean, to finish up the notes, it's those people sitting on the pews to be seen and not participating in discipleship are going to be shot. So, you know, to elaborate on that, what you got, Keith?
I think, you know, coming from preacher's kid, growing up in church, when you see behind the scenes, you see the love, the pain, you begin to get a glimpse into somewhat of what Christ experienced, and what he experiences every day with us. We tend to be kids, children about everything, and we whine and cry about all the stuff that really don't matter. You know? So what I think is, the less we're concerned about being in the pew, and we're more concerned about the love we have for the people that are around us on a day-to-day basis, that's when we're really showing Christ. You know, to some people it seems strange that we're going to talk about a tobacco patch. We're going to talk about, you know, things that happen on the farm. But when you hear the stories and you hear the recounts of the Christ that our grandpa saw in action, that our Uncle Terry saw in action right here on the farm, it starts making things make sense. And we're not in any way trying to say that our church is any better than anywhere else. What we're trying to do is make the most of the fact that we're right here on the farm. We're trying to retell the same story that our grandma taught us. You know, when things happened that weren't good, all our grandma would say is Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Why? Because she understood what his name meant to her. And so, for us, it's not about division. It's not about who, what, why, when, and where. One of the best examples of that was last weekend. I sat in a restaurant with a Venezuelan and two Guatemalans, my wife, and a buddy that was their employer. And I happened to say, you know, in 04, I went to Venezuela on a missions trip. And then the Venezuelan, through one of the Guatemalans, started saying stuff. And when we were done, their employer looked at us and goes, I haven't heard those stories. Why? Was it something special about me? No. Wasn't anything special about me or Elizabeth. It was just the simple fact that we were willing to have a conversation. We were willing to discuss. There wasn't any airs put on. There wasn't any, we didn't have any determination of how things were going to go. And I think that's, a lot of times we try to predict the outcome before we ever attempt to make the connection. And if, you know, if we can show that we're just three guys sitting here that are cousins, that come from a family that did put something into us, the biggest thing that anybody should hear out of that is, hey, if we can do it, you can do it. There's nothing any special, more special about any one of us. We've all done our share of things that we shouldn't have done. But through God's grace, we're sitting here together discussing things, carrying on, having fun. This is more fun to me than anything. And I think that's key to this. Michael, you know, when I see him or hear from him during the week, he's excited about something. I talked to David, and he's excited about something that may not mean nothing to me, but it does to him.
Hey, is this a good spot to put in a plug for Making Tent Rental?
Yeah.
Never a good spot for Jeff.
Yeah, our buddy Jeff. It was his workers that you were talking about. So, but Jeff's done a lot for us here at the church, and as you know, as friends, you know, he's done a lot for us over the years. But especially here lately, we've been providing those tents for us. And anyway.
All right, that's a lot of heavy lifting that y'all, we did right there. And if anybody's still listening, they're probably asleep. But we did it. Now, Michael, do you trust me?
Of course I trust you.
Okay, now, don't ask me if I trust you, because we could go on for days about what kind of level of trust that we have. All right? But you trust me. Will you close your eyes and not look at what I'm going to put in front of you? I promise you it won't hurt you. I just want Keith to see the reaction on your face. It's going to be, it's good, okay?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
I'll close my eyes right now.
All right. I'm going to put something in front of you. I want you to take a deep breath. I want you to tell me what you think about.
Now, I can tell you what that is. From the smell of it, I ain't even opened my eyes yet now, y'all. But that's some pure tobacco leaves that was cured in a barn.
That's what they call flu cured tobacco.
But I'm telling you, that right there.
The smell of flu cured tobacco take me back to 1980 faster than anything else.
Man.
That was our upbringing. That's what we knew. That's pretty much all we knew for a long time.
You know, that's
my life to get that. It was in the middle of Highway 84. I was following a guy who was selling some tobacco the other day to Brookfield, and I could see a little bit of it would fall off every now and then. And that wad fell off. I pulled my truck up in the middle of the median, and I risked my life to get it.
I hear you.
I knew what it would smell like.
Yeah. Well, just the other day when I was mowing the grass out here, I caught a whiff of something. And I went, it took me back to picking one morning, and I had a hornworm come across from the other side of the picker, and it hit me in the face and splatted. And if you remember what that smell was, I caught a whiff of it the other morning when I was on the lawnmower. It's not a pleasant smell, but it's one of those things that reminds you. Hey, we had some good times back then. You know, in the Backer Patch, we learned a lot. We learned to be tough. But that smell right there of these leaves were, you know, it'll take you back there.
But that's what it was all about. The first job that I ever had in a tobacco patch, all right, so growing up smell on the farm, I would do a lot of things. The earliest I remembered a tobacco patch was riding with Grandma to the field to take the break to the hands that were working. But the first time that I actually got to do anything, well, I was stomping tobacco. For those of you that don't know what that means.
In the ring.
We had a ring that was a plastic ring, and when we took the tobacco out of the barn after it was cured, we would put it in a sheet. You would take it to the market in what we call a tobacco sheet. To get that in there, there's a certain weight that you had to have in it. And to get it that much weight in a tobacco, in a bale, you had to compress it a little bit. So we stomped it. And Grandpa, you got to understand that he was, to us, he was a mountain of a man. He had broad shoulders, and he had a voice that sounds like a grandpa's voice. It's a little bit like John Wayne to me. But he would pick me up, I was under my arms, and set me up on top of that ring, and he'd say, stomp it. And if I stomped too hard, he would get on to me because I was stomping too hard. He didn't want us to break the stems of the tobacco.
Don't crack the leaves.
So you had to learn to tread lightly, but you had to have enough force to compress the tobacco at the same time. It was really a delicate situation.
Yep.
Because if you made Grandpa mad, he would be mad.
You didn't want to upset him.
No. Mainly because I just never wanted to disappoint him. I can remember Chris telling us some of the whippings Grandpa gave him. Grandpa never had to whip me. And I think it was because I was scared if he ever did. I don't know if I'd live through it. But I just didn't want to disappoint him either. I never wanted him mad at me. I don't know why I wasn't like that with Lanny, because he used to put the brakes off of me. I didn't mind pushing his buttons as much.
Well, the furthest back that I can remember, and the first account of the tobacco patch that I had, some, you know, It just happened to be my daddy. My daddy brought me over here to Grandpa's house, and they were out picking, and they had to pick on foot. So I mean, I don't know the story behind it, why Daddy was coming over, but he brought me over here, and he helped. He got out there, and he was helping pick, and they took whoever was driving the tractor, took them off the pick, and put me on it. And I couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 years old, just holding the steering wheel, going straight down the middle.
That was probably my promotion day. Julie's promotion day.
I don't remember.
But that's the way it was, you know.
But the excitement of being able to help, you know, I guess, you know, it stuck with me. And to this day, I still don't know all the story behind it or anything like that, but I was honored to help.
That's right. And it was to us, you know. As I say, anytime Grandpa asked us to drive the tractor, I mean, we fought like dogs and cats in the front yard playing football and baseball. But if Grandpa ever, it was kind of like an anointing. Grandpa, he chose me to drive when all these other ones are running around.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to give it up. I can remember we would be jealous of each other.
That's right.
Michael's been driving all morning. I want to drive.
And I can remember coming over here on a Saturday or something with Mama, and it wasn't planting season or picking season or any of that. It may have been right afterwards or whatever, but mowing the roads with Grandpa, going out straight in front of the old house up toward Uncle Bud's, Aunt Jane's, Uncle Terry's, Grandpa holding me in his lap, trying to teach me to steer that old Massey Ferguson. That Massey Ferguson would go as far right as it wanted to, and then you had to bump it barely to get it to turn back to the left. And if you turned it too hard, it would go all the way to the left.
Technically, you were going back and forth the whole time. You never were going straight.
That's just
working.
Yeah, that track. And I've come to learn that Grandpa just didn't fix the tractor. He learned to drive it the way it was built and the way it was. And
Grandpa didn't have a whole lot of time, and he never had extra money for anything. That's one thing, looking back on it. I know, I guess, because I was there a lot more with him. He always, and that's conversations that me and him had later in life, too. Growing up, I grew up under Grandpa. And even later in life, I spent as much time as I could with him, to the point where he was one of my best friends, and not a lot of people can say that, but to have your grandfather be one of your best friends, up until I was 40, I think I was 39 when he passed away. Talking about my age, the only way I remember that is me and Grandpa have the same birthday. And when you share that with your grandpa, it's pretty special. We had a competition. We would always try to remember to tell the other one who could do it first with happy birthday. He usually won. I didn't win a whole lot. But my 40th birthday was my first birthday without Grandpa. And so that's why I can remember that so clear. Another sad part. We're not trying to be sad. But I do have a lot of stories of Grandma and Grandpa because I was underneath them. And that's one thing I want to share. I want my cousins that didn't get to see him, that didn't get to hear these stories, I want them to know what their grandpa was. And he never was a rich man. Now God took care of him, and he never wanted anything. But he never had extra money.
He never wanted.
When I say extra money, y'all, $100, $200 extra in his bank account, man, that would have been big time, really. Right up until the time that he passed, that he never, if he had extra money at the end of the month, he would find something to do with it, to give it, to help somebody out. And that was a lesson to me, you know, for life, and I hope it's a lesson for some of the others.
Well, there's a spot to put a plug in for Massey Ferguson and Tractors.
Spoken by the one that works at Massey Ferguson dealership here in Blackshear, Georgia. Ace Equipment.
But
it is funny how all of us that, you know, we grew up different things, but you work for a tractor place. I've worked in agriculture my whole life.
Yeah, working with those trucks, you know, Ford vehicles with Uncle Sammy getting me started. You know, you got to start somewhere, and if you got a knack for it, go for it. Mm-hmm. That was my knack.
But going back to my earliest memories of the tobacco patch, and why is it so? I don't know it. And what's the word, Keith? It dominates our talks a lot of times because we spent so much time in it and working. But I think it was us being together is why it made such an impact on us. Is, man, I don't know any of my other friends that got to spend as much time with their cousins as I did.
It was basically like we were brothers and sisters more than cousins.
We got to spend the night with each other, and that was a big thing to us, to go and spend the night. Go back to them years, you know, we wore the same thing, Jason, and we used to love it when Jason and Glenn and Steve would come, because they lived in California, man, and they had cool clothes. and what that meant was we were going to have cool clothes the next year, because we swapped clothes back and forth, hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
And we would fight over Jason and Glenn's and Steve's clothes, because they were cool. They were from California.
Not to leave Lacey out, but we wasn't going to wear Lacey's clothes.
Well, Lacey's a girl, and we were boys, and that we didn't believe in doing that. But it was the same. The girls would change.
Yeah.
They would swap clothes back and forth, Tracy and Candy and Julie and Wendy and Tony Shell. And that's the thing. If somebody's going to listen to us, I don't know what we're going to do about naming all of our cousins. We couldn't do it. We could sit here and throw out names, but we're going to forget. And it's not that we're not thinking about them and we don't love them. But especially if we get to naming our cousins' children.
we're going to make it a point to name every one of them.
Well.
And we're going to make it where we can... We're going to try to get each one of them to at least come on and give us a memory that they have of the farm, and that would mean a lot to me if each one of them could, you know, actually come here, but we know that they can't. So they're, you know, call-ins. You know, we want to do that because, man, each one of them has, you know, a story that we might not know. We might not have been here at the time that they came to visit, which most of the time we was, because here comes baby Keith.
And like I said before, Grandma would let everybody know if baby Keith was coming to
visit. That's right.
Because he was, for a long time, he was the last grandchild born, so he was knighted. Baby Keith.
That's right.
Baby Keith.
I still got the picture.
And the nickname. Even though Austin was the baby boy and Laura Lee's the baby girl.
That's right.
Which is my sister. And she came along so far behind us till she don't remember the tobacco patch. She don't have any memories of those days. She probably remembers Belle and Hay and stuff like that. The tobacco patch wasn't all that we did. It was just, you know, Anybody that grew up in the back in South Georgia, they know.
They know,
they know,
yeah,
what we're talking about.
The heat. Yeah.
Yeah, because tobacco was one of those crops you had all year long. We set out the seed in around Thanksgiving when we would make the beds for the plants. You had to take care of those plants all winter long. When you come into the spring, you had to start some people clip those plants. You had to get the dirt ready in the field, and then we would transplant tobacco. That's what we thought spring break was for.
That's right.
We really thought that, hey, this is
school. School closed so we could go work on the farm.
Yeah, school's closed so that we can go plant tobacco for a week. That's what we thought, because that's all we knew. We wasn't going to the beach.
No. Well, the only beach we had was the water hole. Well, you know, and the pond, but we kept that water hole looking like a beach. We was in it so much. But
We sure did. But then we would transplant the tobacco, and then we'd have to use a grubbing hoe and hoe the tobacco.
We were a bunch of damp hoers.
Only when it was raining. We had a field full of damp hoers. I'll never forget telling Grandpa that, and it took him a second because he looked at me and I'm either going to beat him with this or I'm going to laugh.
We was in Miss King's Field, yeah, when that happened. We were
in Miss King's Field, that's, yep.
He got a kick out of it. Oh, boy.
But once we would hoe it, it would grow, but it was always toting irrigation pipe the whole year. That's all it seemed like. That's all we did was irrigate it. Then we had to top and sucker it, and then we would get to pick it.
Yep. Then we got to take it to the warehouse, and I ended up actually working at the warehouse too.
And I bet that's where that smell really takes you back.
Yeah.
To that place.
That was my senior year too.
Right. When Grandpa finally retired from the tobacco farming, that's when we were free agents.
Free agents. I
called it, that's when we entered free agency, and we went and helped other people. But we had a life contract with Jack Bowen Farm. We couldn't go anywhere until he retired.
Unless he wasn't picking that week and he'd farm us out.
That happened a few times.
Yeah.
The irrigation pipe was probably my first experience in the tobacco patch, because when I moved back here, I was six, and it was in the field across from the church now. We were setting them out, and for whatever reason, he didn't work 9 to 5 either, and it was after dark, and the truck battery wouldn't let it wouldn't allow the lights to be run that was pulling the irrigation pipe. So we had the old Oldsmobile following the trailer, and for some reason that I'm still not sure of to this day, somebody thought it would be good to put the six-year-old in the Oldsmobile that weighed as much as a tank and say, follow that trailer. Well, I couldn't touch a pedal and see over the dash at the same time, so somebody outside would holler, whoa, and I would slide down off the seat and hit the brake. Or they said, go, and I popped up over it, leaving it idling to roll forward. So that was my first contribution to the farm here, was driving a car in the field following the wagon that was pulling the pipes as we set out irrigation pipes. But I still ain't sure who had the thought to put a six-year-old in that situation. But hey, you know, God protected us, because there was all kinds of stories that y'all are going to hear like that it didn't make any sense how we survived. But he's been gracious to us and get us this far, and allow us to be able to tell these stories.
So we got several stories that we're going to share But we got to try to keep them in a time frame that'll keep people's attention.
Michael says 30 minutes. I'm like,
we've already been talking for 45.
And we haven't even really told a story.
But, you know, the attention spans these days, they ain't very long, you know. Yeah. So, Aunt Cindy gave us a list of some things she wants us to talk about. And we want to share this first podcast with, or recording with our cousins first, so it kind of gives them something to think about, and if they got a story, if they want to come in or call in and share one with us, then we need to set up times when we can get together, and because we don't have a set date yet of when we're doing this, and you know, all of us have busy lives. Y'all still got kids in high school, and I don't. But I do have grandbabies coming up.
You have a house full of grandbabies.
And we got that wedding for Coy coming up too. So
yeah.
Well, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna try to break these things down into segments, hopefully, so that we aren't capitalizing on your time and taking it away to listen to it. But what we are going to ask you is to pray for us, that we are able to utilize the things that we have, the technology that we have, that we can use our experiences, good, bad, ugly, whatever, to minister to whoever hears these. And so the only way that it's going to be fruitful and productive is that we do a lot of praying, and that we're able to do what is God's will for this, not our idea of what it should be.
We're definitely not doing this for fame and fortune.
No.
We're doing it for His glory.
Yeah.
And for Him to get all the benefits of this. And to, maybe to help somebody else. Like David said, maybe they can benefit from it spiritually.
I guess that's a
wrap for now.
A good wrap for now.